It's been 1 week since the shootings in Las Vegas, and many of us who have been following the story on television and online are beginning to cope with what happened on October 1st. With that in mind, I decided to put together one final episode where I talked to my friend Kyle Harris, who lives in Vegas, to give us an update about what he witnessed all week in his community. I also talked to therapist Courtney Calkins and asked him to share some tips on how to deal with the emotional stress that some of us have been feeling. I'll include their Twitter information in the show notes, as well as links to all the things we talk about on this episode. Also included in the show notes are links to places you can still donate to help families of the victims of the attack, as well as links to places you can buy Vegas Strong t-shirts, where 100% of the profits will go to victims and victims' families. Later in this episode, you'll hear me go on a rant about the importance of having meaningful relationships and connecting with people, not just over social media, but in real life. Over the next couple months, there are a few opportunities to do this. First up, there's the summit, which is happening in Las Vegas on the weekend of October 13th. And if you are thinking about going, I highly encourage it. If you don't know what the summit is, it's a weekend in Vegas where other gambling, eating, drinking enthusiasts get together to share in the experience together. Furthermore, they'll be holding an auction where the proceeds from the auction will be donated to the Victims Fund. Also, Mark and Dr. Mike from the You Can Bet on That podcast will be hosting a crap session at Mandalay Bay to support the staff who work there. If you can't make it to the summit, on October 25th through the 28th, another group of people will be going to Vegas, myself included, for something we're calling Oceans 14 XL. About a dozen or so of us are going, including Mitch and Dr. Kev from the Tipping the Odds Las Vegas podcast, Saul from the Vegas Bright blog, Doug from EpicEsquire.com, and many others. And we're just going to go hang out, drink a little, eat a lot, and do some gambling. We're also planning on patronizing one or two of the local businesses that stepped up to help the relief efforts, because that kind of generosity should be rewarded. Lastly, Zorkfest is happening on December 1st and 2nd in Atlantic City. It's being put on by the people at TravelZork.com, and my friend Vito from the Cousin Vito's Casino podcast will be the MC of the event. At this get-together, they're going to provide tips on how to maximize your travel miles and your casino points, and also our friend Eric Rosenthal will be giving a talk about how to travel for free and how to maximize your gambling dollar. And also, thanks to Eric, if you sign up using promo code #VegasStrong, $25 of every ticket sold will go to the Victims Fund. There's one more thing I'd like to say. There have been so many people who have shared these special episodes on Twitter, and I thank you all for that. It's my sincere hope that these episodes have been helpful and have provided a small amount of comfort. While there are so many people to thank, which I'll do on upcoming episodes of Faces and Aces Las Vegas when it returns to the regular format next week, I'd like to take a moment to thank Emily from the Story Behind podcast for her support. She's been sharing a lot of the donation information on her Twitter account, and she also put out a Story Behind Las Vegas episode of her podcast, which is an interesting, quick 10-minute look into the history of Las Vegas. If you're looking for a fun and informative podcast to listen to, please check out her show, thestorybehindpodcast.com.
For me, it's like, when it happens, you know, we were actually down there the night before at a friend's show at House of Blues, and it's just kind of scary to think, like, you know, that guy was there during that weekend. I mean, you know, nothing happened to me, but at the same time, it's very eye-opening and very scary when it happens in your own backyard. I mean, we had friends that were down there, you know, and we had actually just met these people maybe 2 weeks prior, and we were down at Don't Tell Mama's on Fremont Street. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we were planning to hang out, and then I've been watching their Instagram stories and saw they were down there. And the minute that happened, they were like the first people that I thought of, and we'd only hung out with these people once, and, you know, they made it out, thankfully, unhurt. I mean, I can't even wrap my mind around what happened. Like, it's different when you see it on TV, for sure. And, you know, when you see it happen in another city, you're like, man, that, you know, that's terrible. It's, you know, you feel like you're kind of removed from that situation, and you just kind of get angry about gun laws, or, you know, something happens and people get riled up. But when it happens in your own city, like I said earlier, it's like somebody broke into your house and now you feel violated. And that's kind of the feeling. Like, I've had a hard time trying to process this because nothing like this has ever happened in a city where I've lived. And I don't get emotional about these types of things, but when I saw that death toll come in, and then I keep seeing the stories, and I choke up every time I see something about it.
Yeah, I mean, the closer it hits to home, the more you feel it. And it's definitely made me step back and look at my empathy and sympathy for people, because leading up to this event, there were so many worldwide tragedies in Mexico and Puerto Rico and Texas and Florida and all these other tragedies. And yeah, I was sympathetic and I felt bad and, you know, did what I could. Now it happens in a city that I love very much. And it made me think, did I have the correct response to those tragedies? Should I have stepped up my game there as well? You know?
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I haven't been able to do anything myself, you know, just because of financial situations where I can't get blood or something. And I felt bad because I see tweets from people saying, oh, you know, if you haven't done anything, you should feel bad. Like, why aren't you out there on the ground helping? And for me, it's just people process in different ways, first of all. Right now, I'm actually in the process of planning a pretty big event with a couple of friends of mine, and we have the backing of Life is Beautiful and Zappos. So my contribution, I feel like, is going to be through music, because, of course, Vegas Live Sessions and Open Air is what, you know, I do out here. So I feel like this is my way to get back.
Yeah, I mean, everyone processes things differently, like you were saying, and I think you're doing exactly what you should be doing, which is using the talents and gifts and resources that you have to help. There's a lot of people out there who may be financially tapped, can't do that. But I've been encouraging people to go out, and at the very least, this is something everybody can do, is spread the love. And I'm starting a campaign on Twitter, just myself, if anybody wants to jump in, you know, feel free. But over the next however long it takes, I'm going to try to do 58 acts of random kindness for strangers in honor of the 58 victims of the shooting. It's a little thing. I don't know if it's going to make the world a better place, but I keep saying it sure as hell can't hurt. So if other people want to go out there and try to change their communities, make their communities a slightly better place, I encourage them to do that.
Yeah, I think that's awesome.
What has been the feeling in Vegas over the past week?
You know, the day after, the air was just very somber here. Just nobody was out. You know, people wanted to talk, but people didn't want to talk about what happened right away. But lately, I mean, it's just been amazing to see a city where, you know, if you come here as an outsider, like I've been here for 5 years now, and over the last couple of years, I've kind of felt like Vegas is all about themselves and people don't really care about others. And then you've got the tourists who really don't care about, you know, what's going on in Vegas. And they don't even have any idea that people actually live here. But it's amazing to see that this community came together so quickly and so just selfless. And I've never seen my city like that. And it's just amazing to see that. So I think that the spirits are up here. I think they were angry at first. You know, I think we went through the stages of emotions, and now we're finally at the one where, you know, we're Vegas strong. Like, we're stronger than this, and, you know, nothing like this is going to bring down this community. We actually are a tight-knit community. And I think, as sad as it may be, I think something like this happened, and now we see how well everybody works together.
Now, this is an observation that I had made, and you tell me if I'm wrong, but in going out there over the last couple of years doing this show, talking to people who live in Las Vegas, one of the observations that I made is that it is a very tight-knit community, tighter than any I've ever seen, maybe short of a military town, which Vegas is a little bit of a military town.
Yeah.
But it's interesting when talking to people in the service industry, many people have been shy or reluctant or even guarded into the types of answers that they would give me in fear of revealing too much about their other Las Vegans. And to me, I saw that as we protect our own, you know, it's like family, you know, and you're not inside of the family. So we're going to, you know, slowly give you the information that we want you to know.
Sure.
And I'm wondering if you've noticed that as well, having been there for 5 years, that Vegas is just ridiculously tight as a community.
Well, especially in the downtown area, because we don't, you know, we don't really venture off anywhere else. But the downtown area specifically is very tight knit. And I think those people really, you know, they help out each other. And within the music community, whether it's Downtown Project or Zappos, I think that sort of culture that exists down there, for me anyway, is really nice to have, because I feel like I have somewhere I can go, some people that'll help me out, people that I can talk to, and they definitely look out for their own. But, you know, as far as like other spots in Vegas, like just the community itself, I can't really answer for that. I have my experiences in the downtown area.
I mean, it's kind of funny because I've run into people who know, like, it seems like everybody knows everybody. I ran into that situation with you where you, even when we were doing the interview a couple years back, and Daniel comes walking in and you're like, "Hey, I know that guy."
Yeah. Yeah. Everybody knows somebody. It's kind of crazy. I think Vegas, I always tell people this when they, you know, when they ask about what it's like living here, and it's literally a big city, but little town. And that's the way it feels.
And the other thing that I wanted to just bring up, watching all of this on the news, a lot of the first responders, a lot of the people who came out to give blood, I think they recognize, like, you know, the people will step up to help their communities. But in this particular instance, mm-hmm. what they were doing is they were helping the people who were visiting their community. I have to applaud the city of Vegas for stepping up to helping, just for showing the love to complete strangers. And, you know, you would hope that we would all just do that, not only in times of tragedy, but just every day.
Yeah. I mean, I'm very proud of this city too. I think, like you said, Vegas stepped up in a very big way, and it really opened my eyes to, I think before I was kind of jaded about this city, and now it's just, it's really shown me that Vegas is a good city in it, at the heart of it. And even all around, I feel like Vegas has done a very good thing in the way that they've responded. And I think this community is really showing its true colors now. I think that love and that helplessness was hidden for a little while. But now it's hitting the entire city. And for me, it's really, really nice to see that and to feel that.
Now, given that you're a local, you don't hit the strip often, as most locals don't, but do you right. have any insight into how we as tourists who come to the city should perhaps behave? Is it still party on, or is it, you know, party on taken down a couple notches? Do you have any thoughts on that?
I have a lot of thoughts on that, and I think I'll keep it pretty simple. I mean, when tourists come to Vegas, I mean, of course, you're coming to have a great time. Just remember that there are people that live here. And I think sometimes when people come to Vegas, they get an ego. They're like, "Oh, man, I'm in Vegas and I'm better than everybody." But, like, you're here with millions of people. And I think just having respect for people is the biggest thing that tourists can do when they come to Vegas, because you could be walking around the Wynn or Caesar's Palace and you think you're passing other tourists, but I guarantee you, you're passing at least 20, 30 locals, and all the people that work at the casinos are locals too. So respect is the biggest thing for me.
You bring up a good point about the people who work at the casinos, because a lot of them had friends who were at the concert, some of them injured, and some of them might be dealing with loss, you know, but they still got to get up and go to work.
Oh, I was just going to chime in on the people that actually work at the casinos. Is I have a couple of friends who, you know, work at Caesars, or they work over at Mandalay Bay. And it was really troubling to me when they were told to come in and put a smile on their face and continue like nothing ever happened. And that really struck me hard that, you know, while you should go in and put a happy face on because you're at work, it feels like a lot of these casino employees feel like they're not getting any time to grieve either, whether it directly affected them or not, having friends or them having been down there or something. And I really just feel for those people that still had to go in the next couple of days and just put on a face and go back to work. And I actually had a friend who works over at the outlet malls, and she was telling me, you know, the tourist that came in to the store didn't even say anything about what happened the day before, and they were treating the employees wrong. So that just hit me too, is the fact that other people, you know, because it didn't affect them, they just kind of blew it off a little bit. And it just hurts to see those, you know, those corporate casinos just not really, it felt like they didn't really care about their employees.
I think there's kind of a, you know, the not really a show must go on type of mentality, but there are so many people who are there who, you know, maybe they weren't aware of it. You know, I know when I'm in Vegas, I'm in a media blackout.
Right.
You know, so some people may have been blissfully ignorant of what happened. And not, you know, not to make excuses for these people, but as well as if it happened in their hometown, they would act differently, but they were in Vegas and they may not have that connection right. that you and I have to Vegas. So, you know, it's, you want everyone to feel it as much as you do. But the reality is, like I was saying before, you know, the tragedies in the other cities, Texas, I, you know, went, oh, that's terrible. Let me make a little bit of a donation, do what I can to help. But it didn't impact me the way that this did. And so we can't, you know, we can't assume.
I totally understand.
Yeah. But were you aware of the huge Vegas community, not just in the city, but outside of the city?
Was I aware?
Yeah. Specifically, what I'm talking about is the community, the rest of us who are basically the people who do the podcasts and the people who listen to the podcasts. There are podcasts that get 10, 15,000 listeners from outside of the city who are that interested in your city. And so basically where I was kind of headed towards is you guys are getting so much more love than just inside the city. There are so many of us who are on the outside who wish we could be there to help.
Oh yeah. You know, there's a guy named Jamie Twerkowski, and he's got this nonprofit called To Write Love on Her Arms. And they deal with depression, people who are battling depression and having thoughts of suicide, and they created a shirt, which 100% of the proceeds will go to the victims of, you know, Route 91, which is awesome. And, you know, I'm really excited about what you're doing with the 58 acts of random kind. Like, that's really cool. And I'm definitely going to partake in that, or I'll retweet it, and I want to try and partake in that. But I've seen several other people and communities really trying to step up and help, which is really great.
I've heard from so many people privately on Twitter who have reached out to me because they're disturbed, they're grieving. Mm-hmm. You know, I wanted to let the people of Vegas know that there are so many people around the country who are pulling for you guys, who are rooting and doing what we can to do to help, and sending you guys a lot of love.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of funny when you talked about coming to Vegas and having that media blackout type feeling. I feel like being here after this has happened, I haven't really watched the news at all because there's too much going on. There's too many theories and gun control this, Trump that, and I tune out. And so I kind of miss everything else that's happening, people that are trying to help in Vegas. If anything, I catch it on Twitter or Facebook. I mean, that's been where I've seen a lot of people actually really coming together. I watch the hashtags, and when these other communities are actually doing something, it's really, really humbling and really nice.
Just another thought that I had is, you know, again, as the week goes on, I just keep having these new and different thoughts. And It's that the Vegas, for me, has always been a place of friendship where you strike up a conversation with the person next to you. I don't necessarily behave like that at home, but when I'm in Vegas, I'm super outgoing and friendly and talkative, and hey, you know, to everyone is a friend in that city. And I don't know if other people feel that way, but I would encourage them, if they do feel that way in the city, take that spirit home with you to your city. Go out into public and try to carry that out. Because I think if we as people become more connected again, that would help. Again, can't hurt.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Don't Tell Mama is a piano bar over on East Fremont. And I can't tell you how many times we go there and we meet random people. And the last time we were there, probably about a month ago, we met these two guys from Wisconsin, and they were sitting there by themselves and the bar was full. And, you know, they looked like they were having a good time. So we asked them to come over and sit with us. And by the end of their trip, which was about 4 days later, they'd been at our house three times and we still talk to them. So I love meeting people from out of town here because I get to show them around and I get to show them like what Vegas really is through a local's eyes. And I mean, I agree with you taking that back and just having conversations with people. And just, we saw a girl in the same bar 2 days ago, and she was sitting there alone, and we saw her come in with a friend. And she had just dropped some heavy news on one of our friends, and he was the last to know that one of his friends had just taken her own life after the Route 91 festival, and he was heartbroken, and she felt so bad that he didn't know. So of course we consoled him, but we went up to her, and this is just the type of people that me and my wife are. We went up to her and we chatted with her for like 30 minutes. Cause when you can see people are sitting alone and when you can see that they're not feeling good, you know, go up to them and say, "Hey, are you doing okay?" Like, even if you're a stranger, I mean, it's scary at first, especially if you don't like talking, if you're not good at talking to other people. But I mean, just put yourself in their shoes and just kind of go up and just give them some love. And I think that's what the city is really, really showing right now, is how much they can love others.
Yeah, the lessons of compassion that we're seeing coming out from the city, it's something that we all need to take to heart and carry out within our own communities.
Yeah.
Whew.
The heavy stuff.
Yeah. But having these conversations are good because it's cathartic, and just keeping it all pent up inside and without having someone to share it with, it's not healthy. So I appreciate you making some time. Was there anything else, like anything else that you wanted to talk about or let the people who listen to this episode know?
I would just say, you know, continue helping. Like, there was over 500 people wounded in this tragedy, and you know, the blood banks are full right now. I think they just opened back up, but there's a GoFundMe that Vegas set up, and you can still donate to that. Or,
and the other one that I'm out there pushing, as opposed to the big GoFundMe one, is the Zappos CrowdRise campaign.
Yeah, we're matching the $1 million donation.
Exactly, and they're at about 250,000 right now. So that's awesome.
Yeah. There's several ways to help. I think Vegas 7 has an article that's out there, and I can send this to you on different ways to help. But, you know, just find a way to help in any way that you can, and just keep loving other people. I think that's the best thing that we can do, is just making sure you're empathetic and just making sure that you're doing your best to keep your friends and family close. It shouldn't even be having to go out of your way. It should just be an automatic response. Just love and respect other people.
I'm with you 100%. Well, thank you for hanging out with me and talking about this. It's I'm kind of slowly putting the wraps on the coverage. After I talk to you in a little bit, I'm going to talk to a therapist and, you know, see if he has any good advice for people who are grieving and dealing with it. And, you know, hopefully with these special episodes that I've been putting out, they've been able to help, you know, a couple people. So I appreciate you coming on and helping me do that.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me on.
So, Courtney, thank you so much for joining me. For the people out there who aren't aware of your show, why don't you tell them just really quick a little bit about your podcasts, actually, and as well as your background.
Okay. Well, I'm at Quadfather MFT. That's where you find the Quadcast podcast, which is just me and my buddy cracking wise and telling stories about our lives. And then I have Shrink, the number two Shrink, Shrink to Shrink with Dr. Colleen Mullen, where we take a movie and we pull out different pieces of the movie and analyze the psychology of it and kind of relate to, we use the films to pull out psychological topics that we can use in our own lives. So it, Shrink, the number two Shrink, we're over there too. So yeah, thanks for having me on. This is a rough topic. My background is, I mean, I've podcasted for 3 years, but for 20 years, I've been a marriage and family therapist. So let me throw out my disclaimer here. Anything I say from this point on, don't take as fact. Don't take as advice from a therapist. I don't know you. I don't know your situation, but we'll send out some general stuff that at least will hopefully point you in the right direction. And if you need assistance, you should be able to use the information that you hear here to find someone to help you out.
Exactly. By all means, if you do require assistance, please seek that out. This is just kind of some general coping tips for people out there who feel that they've been, you know, traumatized by what they've been watching on TV all week.
Yeah, and that is one of the things. It's the vicarious trauma, right? It's secondary trauma. We get trained in it at my work because we work in a lot of child protective services cases, and sometimes, you know, it's drugs, it's kids telling their stories about the abuse. And if you hear enough of that, it's going to traumatize you. I mean, I can't kill a conversation quicker than to tell people about the part of my job that is working with abused kids, because you start to talk about it and people are like, I don't want to hear that. Don't want to hear that. Let's talk about the 49ers. You know, let's talk about something else. Yeah. Because it is, it's a hard topic and it's traumatizing. And so it's traumatizing to go through it. And in the Vegas situation, you know, massacre, basically, you know, you've got all the people who were hurt, all the people who were around it, all the people who heard it from a distance, and then all the people who watched it now on all the different medias, and all the people who go back to their hometowns. And those stories are there, and it's all through Facebook. I mean, you just pretty well can't escape it. And it's scary. I mean, it's scary no matter what your distance is or what your connectivity to it was.
And I do want to make sure to point out that we're kind of doing the general discussion about this as opposed to the specific help, because those people who were directly involved in the traumatic attack, they do have grief counselors. They're, you know, they are being provided with the services that they need. This is kind of, I know it sounds a little bit weird that we were affected, but let's face it, we watched it on TV. And when you see people going through that much sadness, we, as humans, we do feel it.
Yeah. And so they actually did studies after 9/11, and the impact on the, just watching it over and over and over again on elementary school children. And their stress levels were raised. Their fear was raised because they were inundated visually, you know, and obviously conversationally in their real lives over and over and over again. So at some point, yeah, you got to give yourself a break. You got to turn it off, even though if you've got family or friends or people who are seriously impacted, or are you looking for justice or some understanding? You just want to wait for that new fact, that new thing that's going to kind of line it up and help you settle it in your own psychology, in your own head. But at some point, it becomes just overly traumatizing and not good for you.
Which is actually a good first tip. I think I probably could have used that tip a couple of days ago, because I've been obsessively watching the news, trying to keep up with the latest facts and just, you know, being inundated by heartbreaking images. And I, by about day three at the end of the night, I feel like I've just run a marathon, even though I've spent most of the time on my couch in front of the TV.
Yeah, but I bet if we could have like body sensors on you, your stomach was tight and your legs were clenched and it's like not breathing deeply, not relaxing, you know, none of that. Because it's, you're on the edge of your seat all the time, because if you just flash those images, I mean, one of the things that I looked at after you and I talked about me coming on is looking at some of the post-traumatic stress responses. Because we're really, if you're thinking neurologically and emotionally, when something like this happens, it's not just about the Vegas event. It's about all the other little things in your life that you've experienced, earlier traumas, that are similar to this event, right? So you can get re-triggered by something that happened, you know, whatever, a firework accident when you were seven that had these big explosions and you saw people run and be scared or get hurt on the ground. I mean, there's those types of things that come up. So it's not even just the initial event or the precipitating event. It's all the other things that are underlying it that end up getting tapped. They did a study of post-traumatic stress disorder veterans, right? And so they had a comparative between those who were diagnosed, like 50% were diagnosed with PTSD and the other 50% weren't. And then they put them through just looking at a series of faces, like the same person, like four or five different levels of anger or hostility. And what they found, I'll boil it all down because some of this is boring research stuff. But in the end, what they found was the people who were already diagnosed with PTSD tended to misread the faces more than those who didn't. So what that means is if you went into this situation having some level of PTSD or anxiety symptoms or whatever, and then something new triggers you, you're not going to actually process the events in the same way with the same emotional content as someone who doesn't have a pre-existing PTSD or anxiety situation, right? So it creates more anxiety, and then you misread situations in your real life as being dangerous or hostile towards you, and so you get tapped even more from your own history, and these things can start to kind of snowball when you think, gosh, this was a small thing. Why am I reacting so heavily? But it's actually, you know, neurochemical, and it's natural for that to happen. But realize that whatever people go through, they're also going through all those anxieties, those little traumas, as we call them. I'm trained in EMDR, which is a post-traumatic stress disorder treatment. It's actually a very, very good one. But that's, we call them little T's or little traumas that are similar to the major existing or the new trauma.
Now, what are some good coping mechanisms that people can use or do at home? One of the things that I've been doing, and I was being a little bit hyperbolic about being glued to the TV, because every day I do go to the local dog park with my dog. And one of the things that I've really enjoyed this past week, more so than I have in the past, is being just covered by dozens of dogs and wrestling and playing with them and throwing the ball and watching them play. It's brought a lot of joy back into my life. What are some things that like that or not like that, that people can do?
Yeah, self-care stuff, basically. Well, the first step in self-care is to know yourself, meaning like my wife, she's an extrovert. If she's going to process an event, she's going to talk about it, right? She's going to call people. She's going to interact. She's going to get other people's opinions. She's going to go on Facebook. She's going to, okay. If I'm processing a stressful event, I withdraw. Okay. So I pull away. I think about it. I might write some stuff. I might say some stuff like on a podcast, but in the end, I just need to kind of get in my own headspace, right? So I need to understand it. And we all do. I mean, and you're never going to understand this because this dude was crazy and the situation is unfathomable. I mean, to really take in, but you need to understand and put it in a place in your life. And the other part of knowing yourself is, well, what's good for me? Almost always exercise is helpful. Moving your body. I mean, doing stuff at the dog park, that's great. Stepping away from whatever's triggering you, you know, if it's the TV, if it's the social media, if it's conversations about it on Facebook, just unplug for a moment from those things and do things that are not bad distracting, but distracting, because there are other things in life. I mean, the bills still need to get paid and you still need to go to work and we still need to drive, you know, to go get groceries. I mean, there's all these things. So finding a healthy distraction. Obviously, drinking, drugging, things like that, not great distractions. Sometimes sleep is good because sometimes people ignore that. So eat healthy, drink lots of water, get good sleep, do physical exercise, talk to people if you need to. Those are like, that's 101 to just general health, but there are also great ways to deal with stress.
So one of the things that I noticed in my behavior is about day three of watching the news coverage, I really started to find little joys in humor. Is it okay to allow yourself to laugh? Because some people feel a little bit guilty during a horrific event. They feel guilty if they take pleasure in humor.
Oh, I think you have to. I mean, if you can. I mean, MASH, right? And we call it the kind of the black humor. You have to. And it doesn't mean, I work in a very serious, stressful position and working in counseling and divorce and child abuse and all that stuff. And we have to make jokes. And the problem, I think, without getting too much political or getting on my social soapbox, we've made a lot of things not okay to talk about. Everybody takes offense at everything. It's like, look, we have to be lighthearted. You know, there are surgeons, you know, doing surgery on people whose lives are at stake, and they have to make jokes here and there because they got to lighten the mood. Too much intensity is not helpful. That's bad for your body. You need to release it. And humor is a great way. I mean, we've all had those gut belly laughs, you know, and usually at inappropriate things in church or something, you know, or at a wedding where you can't make those noises or whatever. So, yeah. And there's something, it's physical. It's a physical release. It also releases the endorphins. I heard something, and I'm going to get all the numbers wrong, but I'll get the ratios relatively right. The average child in a week laughs like 1400 times, and the average adult in a week laughs 28. I mean, there's something wrong. You know, we've gone too far with not laughing in the wrong places, and we've taken it to not laughing at all. And obviously, we have to be sensitive, right? If someone's going through something that's, you know, they lost a loved one or something really terribly serious, you know, it's not, you know, not the time to be cracking wise. But there are lots of other times where it's like, you got to just kind of find the humor in it. And not that you're lightening it or it changes anything, but it's definitely, of course, it's great for your mental health if you can.
What place does anger have in all of this?
You know, there's Dr. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross came up with the 5 stages of grief. And they are denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. So I consider it one of the worst acronyms in the world, but it helps me remember DABDA. D-A-B-D-A. So denial, first stage, it's shock. It's really, I don't like denial because that's like, no, it didn't happen. And although we may say that, we know what's happening. It's not denial. It's shock. It's disbelief, right? I can't believe this is happening. That's phase one. Then denial, anger. So you get angry about whatever is happening, right? And which is a biological response to fight, flight, or freeze. So you need to get out. Like, I mean, we saw all of those reactions in the videos of the Las Vegas shooting. Some people froze, some people ran, and some people looked to try to do what they could to battle in a defensive way what was happening. So, you know, you got your anger, and then you've got bargaining. So bargaining is, if only I wouldn't have gone to the concert, if someone wouldn't have let that guy up with the guns, if someone wouldn't have covered and ducked, or they would have just had a shield, or, you know, darkness, or whatever. I mean, there's a million things that would have changed it, right? But that's normal. All right. So that's going to happen every time. And then there's depression, which is kind of a sadness, an overall malaise of, gosh, this is, my life is going to be totally different as a result of whatever it is, the loss of a loved one or this Vegas shooting or whatever. Very normal. And then there's acceptance, which I prefer to say acknowledgement, because, you know, it didn't happen, but let's say my dad died 5 years ago. People are like, all right, well, you're at acceptance yet? And I'm like, no, my freaking dad's still gone. I can accept that, but I can acknowledge it without pain, right? I can acknowledge it without it throwing my whole day off. Or, you know, I can remember those things. I can see the pictures. I can remember, you know, his laugh, his, you know, run across him in pictures and things like that. You know what I mean? So it's not a true acceptance. Oh, well, yep, it happened. No, it's an acknowledgement, and it carries less pain. So in order to process through people's loss and grief, and there's a lot of loss and grief, and it's not just the people who died. There's a loss and grief, probably the Vegas people, of a loss of safety and security just walking through my streets. Going to a concert, going to, right? So there's some of that. That's a grief. You're going to have a grief loss experience of that. So anger, and there's nothing wrong with anger. Anger is, we should be angry. There's lots of times we need to be angry, and the anger, we use the anger to have an energy to accomplish what we need to change in order to stop whatever it is that's making us angry. Now, the extremes are awful, right? People punch people and beat their wives and kick their dog. And, you know, that's bad anger. But there's good anger that can be motivating to help us make something new out of whatever's going on in the situation. So it's part of the process, and people cycle through. They don't, it's not 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, D-A-B-D-A, like I said. They bounce around. Sometimes they'll bounce around in the same sentence or two sentences in a row, but it's all normal and it's all part of the process. And don't run from it, or you'll never work through your grief.
You know, that's interesting, because up until now, I had been describing it as this weird feeling, this weird energy that I've been having that I've been trying to channel into something productive.
Mm-hmm.
But now, after talking to you, realizing that it's probably a bunch of anger that I have.
Yeah, to do something different, right? Right. I mean, to tweet out that link, to get people informed, to let people know where they can put their energy, because everybody wants to help, but we feel helpless in a lot of different ways. You know, so if contributing money can help, if, you know, in natural disasters, and it probably happened in this one too, which wasn't a natural disaster, but a disaster nonetheless, they actually send out FEMA therapists who are trained in EMDR, which is a way of dealing with PTSD, like a single incident. I mean, it can be any incident, but in these situations, it's a critical incident and you respond. And what they say is get people to process the event as soon as they can after the event occurs. So a lot of times people want to withdraw. I can't talk about it. I don't want to. Well, as far as statistics and processing and getting through it, they say do something right away. Don't just let it sit and fester and process on the inside. You have to be able to work through it, or it will take seat in your brain. It will actually rearrange your brain a little, because that's what the treatment does, is it rearranges the neurological processes of how you think about events and picture events and things like that. That's what EMDR, it reorganizes it or rewires it. So what you don't want to happen is after the event, have your way of thinking be stuck in this critical fear way. You actually have to process it and think about it. And that's what you're doing with your show. You're trying to gain a handle on it and you're not running from it. You're saying, all right, let's work through these pieces. This is uncomfortable. It's easier to sit and watch college football right now on Saturday. But doing something and going towards it is going to help you process and keep the pot stirring so your brain doesn't settle with these events in your brain the way you understand them now, because after you think about them and talk about them, you're going to think about them differently and talk about them differently. And those might be the thoughts and cognitive processes you want to get stuck in your brain, as opposed to the trauma responses right after an event.
You know, it's a weird balancing act, because on one hand, you want to take a break from all of the coverage, and so therefore you go watch the football game.
Mm-hmm.
Or on the other hand, you don't want to run from your emotions and bury it under a football game. But I think everybody has to just kind of gauge where they're at. And also, on the previous episode, Adam from the Vegas Fanboy podcast let people know that if anybody does want to talk about this, they can reach out to him. And I made the same offer. Just hit us up on Twitter, DM us, and, you know, we could just talk over Skype or give me a call. Because I've found through the week, having conversations with friends who get it, who are from Vegas, has really helped. And it's kind of kept me level-headed and adjusted as best as I can be.
Yeah.
Because I'm a nut.
Well, all of us are only marginally adjusted from day to day, no matter what.
Yeah.
You're right. Don't saturate yourself and don't escape, right? Those are the two ends of the spectrum. The way that you'll know is if, let's say you're sitting down and watching your college football game and you start throwing the remote and your drink at the TV, I'm thinking you're running from something. I'm thinking that you're trying to sublimate it. Right? So if you're just chilling, but if you're having overreactions, always let your emotions be your guide. I don't know if that's a Jiminy Cricket or who that is, but, or is it But no, watch your emotions. If you're starting to have overreactions to different things, you're like, all right, what am I not dealing with? Because this ain't about what's in front of me. It's about what's going on and what I'm not dealing with. So there's good distraction and bad distraction.
Interesting. Was there anything that I didn't think of to ask?
Well, I did pull up a fact sheet on vicarious trauma or secondary trauma. So those people who may be the first responders or the people who are relative to people who were there or near there. I've heard you talk a lot about, and I enjoy the kind of behind the scenes look that you get at the Las Vegas community, all the working people who live there day in and day out. My father-in-law lives there, but he's retired. But there is the, you know, all the servers, all the drivers, all the people who work in the hotels, all the people who work in, you know, the restaurants, in the entertainment, and all that. They're a community. They see each other in the streets, in the hallways, all in the parking lots. They see each other all the time. So there are these people who were in and around it, to whatever degree, that are impacted, which would be secondary or vicarious trauma. So some of the things they tell us counselors to look for are the signs and symptoms of secondary trauma survivors. So if they're having difficulty talking about their feelings, if they have a startle effect or being jumpy easily, if they overeat or undereat, if they have difficulty falling asleep or difficulty staying asleep, so they wake up several times a night and can't go back to sleep. If they are worried about people, you know, wonder how that person's doing. Overly worried about people. Dreaming about the events, you know, diminished joy towards the thing they once enjoyed, right? Things you used to love. So if some of these things are showing up, you should start to worry, all right, am I being impacted with the secondary trauma? And I have a couple more areas. If you want to hear about other areas, you can look to see if, like, wonder if this is just normal because I'm watching the news, or if I'm actually experiencing secondary trauma. You want to hear those?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. So some of the things that people who are around and have experienced, they may have or experienced trauma, at least secondarily, is their behavior might change, right? So you might overwork, right? Throw yourself into whatever it is you're doing. You may not work at all. You may start to miss work because you are triggered by going back out into the world. Just feeling overly tired, and irritable. If those things start showing up and people start talking to you in your life going, man, what's going on? You're like, nothing, everything's okay. Maybe you ought to listen to the people in your life and do a kind of a self-check and go, yeah, what is filling my thoughts? Like I always say, what jumps in your head, right? So when you're just driving around or whatever, listening to music, and all of a sudden you start thinking about these thoughts, or when you put your head on the pillow at night, what's jumping in your head? It's not like you're trying to think about it, but what is it? And that's when you start to go, all right, maybe that is impacting my behavior. Some relationships, it can affect our relationships. So you can get more conflicts at work, or you can go the other way and isolate from work. So you're watching for major changes in yourself or people who are in your life who might be going through secondary trauma. So just these big changes that goes from social to not social. If you have a really difficult time communicating, you might get frustrated because people don't understand you, probably because you're in your head and I call it RAM, to use a computer term. So your random access memory, all the time there's this trauma going on in your head. So where you used to have 100% of your RAM available to have conversations and process facts and to do your job and to, you know, focus on different things, all of a sudden you might have 30% RAM taken up by your trauma. It's always kind of running in the background like a hamster on a wheel. And so you're not able to think about your thoughts. You're not able to express yourself clearly. You're not able to attend to what everybody else is saying as easily as you had before, because in their pause moments, you jump back and you might get a flash of a picture or a thought or wonder how that person's doing, or if only they would have done that, you know, those types of things. So you really have to kind of be self-aware if you're going to catch it as early as you can. The problem with secondary trauma is there's always a primary trauma person, meaning are us people who go through the secondary trauma. I might be working with a kid who was abused or molested or beat or whatever. And if I start to feel bad for myself for having to hear that story, I right away go, well, who am I? I shouldn't have any trauma. The kid had to live through it. You know, he's 7 years old and weighs 63 pounds and he had a 250-pound, 6'2" man yelling at him. Who's going to feel bad for me? I have no reason to complain. He had to go through it. Well, you both went through it, right? Granted, it's way worse for the kid, but that doesn't mean that the person who's experienced the secondary effects had no effects. So legitimize it. Understand, be aware of yourself. And then if you realize that this is something that's going on, find those ways that you can process. Do you talk to a counselor? Do you talk to your friend? Do you talk to your wife? Do you write a journal? Do you write a song? Do you, you know, what do you do? What do you do to help get through it so that you don't get stuck and your brain neurochemically doesn't get stuck with those points so you can get more trauma later with PTSD?
I was talking to someone else a little bit earlier, and this will be the interview that I played right before this one, and he brought up a very interesting point, and I'm wondering if you had any thoughts on it. He was saying that the people who work in the service industry on the strip, the, you know, the dealers, the staff, the cocktail waitresses, etc., they've definitely been affected. How should we, as visitors to the city, behave for the short-term or long-term future?
Well, I don't know if it's any particular different other than be decent, have patience, you know, and I think that goes with everyone, right? I mean, everywhere you go, I think it helps you. Like I wanted to tweet it out, and I actually looked, I couldn't remember what date the Vegas shooting actually happened. And I looked back to see if it was on 10-1. I don't think it was officially. But when you were talking on your last show, you were talking about do good things. You know, if you want to do something, I thought, oh, it would be cool to have 101, you know, good things if it was like 10-1 or whatever. Because doing good things not only makes you feel good, it makes the other person feel good, hopefully. So being extra kind and being understanding. There will be people who want to talk about it, and other people who don't want to talk about it at all. So you just have to be conscientious of talking like, hey, were you here during the shooting? And reading them to see if that is something they want to talk about, because it may help them, or it may trigger them and they may not want to talk about it, or they may just be over it. So I would think the main thing that we can do as visitors is be decent people and have patience and just support anybody that needs any support. You know what I mean? It's not like we're there to gamble and have fun and make memories, but don't try to do it so fast and furious that you don't actually see that the people wearing the uniforms are people. They're not just mechanisms that are there to give you what you need or desire if you pay for it. They're actual people. So look at them like that.
And it did happen on 10-1, and I'm glad you brought that up, because that's something that I'm actually doing in honor of the 58 victims who were killed in the attack. I am on a current campaign. I have one down, 57 to go, mm-hmm. of 58 good and decent things you could do for strangers.
Yeah.
So that's how I'm channeling my fury into random positive acts of energy. Kindness. The ideal behind it is the person who committed these atrocious attacks, he felt disconnected from society in some way, for whatever reason. We may never know the answer to that question, why he did it, but he felt disconnected. And I think as we, as a community, as a people, if we can start to connect to each other in meaningful ways, you know, we live in an era of connectivity where there's Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and Snapchat and all these things where we're connecting, but they are all superficial relationships where we really don't know each other. And I'm advocating for people to put it down, get out into the real world and start to get to know each other, which is what has been one of the great things about participating in this Vegas community for me. Mm-hmm. I've gone to a couple of group gatherings, whether it be the Nerd Society putting together the summit or 360 Vegas putting together their Vegas vacations. You're eating, sharing meals, drinking, gambling, having fun with real humans in real life and creating bonds between people. And I feel like if we get out there into this culture and society and do that a little bit more, maybe we can, you know, turn back the tide a little.
You know, there's something to be said for faking it. And what I mean by that is, like, let's say my wife asked me right now, it's Saturday afternoon, and she says, hey, let's go do something Saturday night. We got these friends, we're gonna go out and get drinks and, you know, have some hors d'oeuvres and whatever, and then we'll go to their house and play some games or whatever. I'm like, I don't really want to do that. I'm not really in the greatest mood today, but you know, she's my wife and I love her, so, and she, you know, she's got my nuts in a jar on the mantle, so I do what she wants against what I want to do. And yeah. I go and I fake it, and guess what, as I fake being wanting to be engaged and connecting, I actually start to enjoy the conversations and the meal and the drinks and the games and the rest of it. So, because, and then guess what? At the end of that, I feel like in a more upbeat mood because I forced myself to go out and have an interaction with a three-dimensional person and have an exchange conversation. I had to actually pretend to be interested in what they were saying for a while. So it made me pretend to be upbeat. And then guess what? I ended up being more upbeat. So those three-dimensional interactions were more connected, but were more isolated than ever too, right? Yeah. So I got all these people at my fingertips, but none in the room with me. So force you, I'm with you. Go out, have three-dimensional interactions, and it will actually change your brain chemistry. You get, because just a tweet or a Facebook post, that doesn't force you to interact. It doesn't force you to connect, and it doesn't, you know, it's not a give-take, volley and serve response interaction with another human. It's simply text on a screen. What you'll find is that doing those 58 nice things, it's going to help you. I mean, you're going to be a nice guy 58 times. And guess what? That makes you feel good about you. And it's not, it's called the helper's high. That's why I don't believe fully in, or I don't believe in true altruism, because being nice to someone makes me feel good. So I'm getting something out of it, which is perfect. It's the best reward to get, right? It doesn't cost anybody else anything. And I actually get to help someone else. But I like me better because of it. So, and hopefully the other people enjoy whatever it is I have to offer as I do a service for them.
And the last thought that I'll put onto it is, you can start it, and if you only get 10 deep and fail, that's better than not doing anything.
And I'll challenge you to push yourself in a new direction too, is don't just do it for strangers. I'll challenge anybody listening. Pick the top 10 people in your life, and at some point this week, tell them you love them. How about that? Well, what would that change? That would be amazing.
Oh, see, now you're opening a can of worms, because if I do it for strangers, it works. I don't like the people who I'm close to.
Oh, I didn't say lie to them. I just said, tell them you, all right, if you got three people that you love, tell them you love them.
No, I'm totally kidding about that. I have very open relationships with my family, and I could call them right now and tell them I love them. They know.
Yeah. But you know what I mean? Pick those people. I mean, a lot of people don't. So, you know, use that time. If nothing else, I've said it a couple times in response to, you know, the Vegas shooting to my wife. I said, what do we have? We realize we have now. We have now, we have the people we have. And tomorrow's not promised. And if we stop taking it for granted, I think we'll be kinder to ourselves and kinder to others and more gracious with the people we have in our lives. Because the truth is, tomorrow is not promised. So I don't want to go out in a bad mood. I want to be in a good mood when I go out.
Yeah, and I was saying that to someone too. I think what affected all of us is, again, we've been reminded of our mortality.
Mm-hmm. Random mortality.
It shakes us all. Yeah, right? Yeah, with a random mortality, yeah.
Every time someone dies, and I think we all do this, they're like, oh, did you hear Jim died, the guy who we went to school with? Oh, really? How? Right? First question, how? And as they answer, like, well, he got lung cancer, and oh, yeah, he's a pretty heavy smoker. Oh, good. Okay, so now I'm thinking, okay, I'm not going to die of that one because I don't smoke. Or he was texting and driving. Okay, I'm not texting and driving anymore. You know, I mean, that's part of the reason why we ask what happened, right? But something like this, this random thing that I absolutely have no control over, I'm going to go to a concert. I'm going to go to a basketball game. I'm going to go to a county fair. I'm going to be in large groups of people. How do I feel calm in that from some random situation, right? So that's, we ask how people die. And in this situation, it's not comforting. It's not like, well, I can avoid that because I'm going to exercise and not be overweight and not die of high blood pressure. Nah, I have no control over this. So this one is a weird one, you know, because we have to live life. You know, if we stop, you can't even say the terrorist wins because the terrorist is dead. But he's taken something from me even in his death that I'm not willing to give up. I'm going to live life. And if I go out at a concert, I go out at a concert. I just, you just have to, I can't control it.
What I'm hearing from you is I need to eat more, drink more, do all the things you do then, and other things, gamble more, those types of things you do in Vegas, basically live life to the fullest responsibly.
Yeah. Amen. Right. Why not?
Yeah.
I mean, and you know what? And enjoy the people in your life. The people who you spend 80% of your time with, enjoy them. Mostly they piss me off, but I'm talking to myself here too, right?
Yeah.
So appreciate it.
So get out there. Yeah. Let's get out there and enjoy life. You know, that feeling that you have when you're in Vegas because you're having such a good time, man, do that every day. Put in an effort to do that every day.
It's called mindfulness, right? Everything's okay right here, right now. Enjoy it, because stressing about the future, I can't control it. Worrying about the past, can't control it. All I got is now.
Courtney, thank you so much for coming on and send me the bill.
No, man, you know what? The only thing I love more than therapy is podcasting. So thanks for giving me a venue to kind of process it myself. And I do therapy, you know, 8 hours a day because I need therapy 8 hours a day.
And just for the listeners out there, Courtney will return on a future episode of Faces and Aces. We recorded something a couple of weeks back, but it's going to take me a little bit of time to find a great pairing for his story. But that is coming up in, I'd say, semi-distant future.
Yeah, everything pairs with hookers, though, doesn't it?
Just yeah, kidding. But there's finding no a hooker to talk to.
No hookers in my story, sorry.
Courtney, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you.